Welcome to the SK Wealth Management Solutions and Knowledge Podcast, where we take an integrated approach to financial planning and investment management to improve your financial lives. My name is Mac Richards. I'm a client relationship manager here at SK Wealth Management. Today, I have the pleasure of being joined by Matt Neeland, our Chief Investment Officer. Today, we're talking about ESG, or Environmental, Social, and Governance Investing. Others may call this socially responsible, impact investing. No matter the name we use, I'm excited to be here today with Matt to discuss this growing trend, new developments in this area, as well as some potential areas of caution for investors. Matt, let's start off with an easy one. Talk to us about these three pillars: environmental, social, and governance. What are they all about, and what are we looking for in each of these areas?
I like the easy questions to start. The factors that make up the scores has continued to evolve. Also, more and more companies are providing data on how they're performing in ESG categories. We're now getting data from four sources versus one when we started our ESG strategies. Also, the factors that determine the scores are adjusted based on the industry they're in. But first, the E, which stands for environmental issues. We measure how well a company is performing using five measures. They are greenhouse gases as a percentage of revenue, energy usage as a percentage of revenue, percentage of water per revenue, and percentage of waste per revenue. For example, an oil producing company, the measurements will be adjusted to greenhouse gases as a percentage of a barrel of oil production, energy and water usage to produce a barrel of oil, spills per barrel of oil production. So lower scores in each of these categories show the companies that have the lowest environmental impact. S in the ESG covers a company's impact on society and impacts on employees. These measures include occupational health and safety, labor and employment practices, operational risk management, community rights and relations, and ethics and compliance. In this category, the companies with the highest social scores are performing the best in managing their impact on society. And then finally, the G, which stands for governance. We measure diversity, independence, and compensation among the board and the executive team.
Matt, trying to do good with your money is not necessarily a new concept. And some people say that social responsible investing has its roots in apartheid, with university endowments divesting of South African companies. Others say this goes back to Methodist teaching 200 years ago. Others say this goes back to Jewish or Muslim communities long before then. But I think what separates these past approaches to how we think about investing today is that they were very much exclusionary, meaning if you didn't believe in a company's mission, you didn't invest in it. You were just talking about investing in oil companies, which I think a lot of people wouldn't even consider when talking about ESG. So it seems like there's a more inclusive, maybe there's a more proactive approach to aligning values with dollars. Can you talk about that shift? And can you talk about how fund managers are using their clout to drive change at these companies?
It's pretty amazing to see how ESG data is being used to create positive change. BlackRock, one of the largest investment firms in the world, has fully embraced complying with ESG standards internally and with the companies they invest in. They are also using their proxy voting clout to change the behavior of companies. Another watershed moment was ExxonMobil versus Engine Number One. This is a modern day proxy fight to create change at a company, a true David versus Goliath story. Exxon has a market value of $265 billion, and Engine Number One, which is an activist investment firm, has $250 million. Engine One's tactic focused more on persuading big institutions to back its criticisms of Exxon that they lacked conviction in clean energy strategy and lagged on financial returns, and focused less on pulling in retail investors who are often inclined to back management. They shocked the investment world to win three board seats at Exxon and have begun to exact change. To address your questions about the use and structure of ESG strategies, you're right. Before the data was available to measure ESG compliance, it was easy for an investment manager to use exclusionary approach. The most popular was to exclude the so-called sin sectors or stocks. They included alcohol, tobacco, and firearms, gambling as examples. They didn't need specific data to back up their portfolio choices. This approach still exists and is being done on specific criteria as well, such as avoiding fossil fuel related companies or companies that employed child labor. But with the addition of more and much better data, a new approach has emerged. It's an inclusionary approach where all investments are scored on ESG standards. So you can include all sectors of the markets, but in each sector, you choose the companies that have the highest scores. At SK Wealth, we score all investments and use an inclusionary approach in how they adhere to ESG standards. That gives us great flexibility to build customized portfolios to meet clients' specific needs and requests.
We're shifting from this just excluding the stocks and the sectors that we don't like, you know, excluding the sin stocks, to something a little more inclusive, you know, factoring these different screenings. But how does this shift in philosophy show up in the options that are now available to investors?
Many more options are available today. ESG-labeled products have been one of the fastest-growing areas in mutual funds and ETF or exchange-traded fund creation. This makes sense, as estimates are that the global ESG assets will surpass $50 trillion by 2025. Investment firms have raced to create products and strategies to meet that demand. Some are overall ESG equity strategies. Others take a more narrow approach, such as clean water, women's founders, or renewable energy are examples. We are also seeing more bond strategy join the ESG strategy boom. I'm excited about the growth of investment options, both broad and concentrated approaches. It allows us to create customized ESG-focused portfolios for our clients.
More popularity, more options coming to market. With this, you know, there's no shortage of concerns around greenwashing, meaning investment firms take a failing fund, slap the socially responsible label on it, and now they're marketing it as an ESG fund when the underlying investments and philosophy really haven't changed at all. Or let's say the investment firms themselves are trying to do the right thing, but companies aren't being entirely transparent at their level. Example of this may be a company says they're going to plant 10,000 trees halfway around the globe to offset their carbon emissions. How do we know those trees are being planted? How do we know if investment firms' claims are more than just marketing ploys?
Unfortunately, greenwashing and mislabeling exists. We knew this was going to happen as demand for investment products that adhere to ESG standards has exploded. It's reached the point where the SEC, Securities Exchange Commission, is looking into investment firms' ESG claims to see whether the reliability of those claims. This is where ESG data we gather and the scoring tools we use is so important. This allows us to see through the marketing pitches and labeling to see which investments meet the ESG standards. So we use data from four sources and we get ESG scores for each provider. We then calculate an SK Wealth composite score using all of this data and rank the investments based on ESG scores. With all these scores, we don't just look at the absolute numbers. We compare them to the company's peers and whether they are trending in the right direction. It helps us determine the real ESG leaders from the pretenders. The final step for us in determining the best investments to include in portfolios, we take the ESG scores and overlay all the standards we look at in an investment.
I'm going to brag a little bit here on our behalf. So you mentioned these different scores, different screens that we have, but you had the scores of our portfolios analyzed recently and they came back pretty strong. What does that mean?
I think it's important to always get a fresh set of eyes on our approach to measuring how well our ESG-centric portfolios adhere to ESG guidelines. We participated in a study conducted by Northern Trust Asset Management. Northern Trust is one of the largest investment managers in the world. They have $1.5 trillion in assets under management, including $170 billion in sustainable strategies. Also, the study was conducted by MSCI, which is one of the global leaders in creating and managing financial market indices. They're also a pioneer in designing and managing ESG indices. I'm happy to say our portfolios received top scores versus our peers and the ESG benchmarks. So it was great to get confirmation of our tools and our efforts.
We've done, I think, a very good job of covering the basics of ESG, what these investments are focused on, how they're scored, how they've evolved over the years. This all sounds good, but let's be honest, Matt. People come to us, and yes, a good number of our clients are charitably inclined, but people are investing for their own goals. They want to see growth on their investments so they can retire, help kids out, go on vacations, whatever it may be. So how do these ESG or socially responsible investments, how does the performance compare to what we'll call their traditional counterparts?
Performance has been an interesting story that's taken many investment professionals by surprise. For years, the mantra and reality was ESG strategies make you feel good about your investments, but they came with an opportunity cost of lower returns. It has changed dramatically. And in a lot of cases, ESG strategies match or beat non-ESG focused strategies. But right now, it is not a simple story of just buying the top performing ESG investments. That's because the companies that score the highest tend to be tilted toward technology, industrials, and material sectors and underweighted in sectors such as energy, utilities, and consumer discretionary. The concentration in certain sectors is gradually changing as more companies measure and adhere to ESG standards. But for now, it's important to understand that and build portfolios that manage those over and underweights. It also supports our approach to measuring all investments. That way, we can include the best ESG performers in all sectors, so we don't get caught with biases or uneven performance.
So you can feel good about your money on more than one front, which is good to know. What do you see as the future for ESG investing in our firm and at large? Will it always be separate tracks of ESG or non-ESG? Or now that we've established you can still have strong performance, do you think more investment managers will be paying attention to these areas? Are there any sectors or types of investments that are hard to make ESG that you hope will improve?
I believe in the years ahead, pressures will be on companies and governments to step up their efforts to build more sustainable and equitable future. I mean, across the investment management world, I see changes in adoption in the use of ESG standards. I'm seeing ESG ratings become more accepted as a regular and integrated part of security analysis at many firms. Even firms or strategies that do not have ESG in their name are still measuring the impact of ESG compliance on their investments. And this is all happening because it is helping them with their investment selection. Investors are asking for it, but not every investor can be choosy about the companies they own. If you think about big pensions, endowments, and sovereign wealth funds, they oversee tens of billions and even trillions of dollars, which means they have to own practically everything. If they take a stance of avoiding companies that fall short of ESG standards, they're going to quickly run out of places to invest their money. Instead, these so-called universal owners are trying to bolster companies' ESG practices by supporting ESG-related proposals through their proxy voting and removing directors who stand in their way. But at SK Wealth, we currently offer clients the option of ESG-centric strategies or a blended approach. As I mentioned before, in both approaches, we create ESG scores for all investments. What this has led to is we are seeing more investments meeting our standards in both portfolios. This is further proof that companies that score highly in meeting ESG standards can be good investments for all portfolio types. But the menu of choices is still not complete. There are still sectors of the markets or regions that do not have good ESG options, but I expect that to change over time. When I look ahead to how we will manage portfolios, I see more of a blending of our strategies to incorporate ESG leaders and even more customization, meaning I anticipate some clients will have specific requests such as no fossil fuels, more women representation on boards, companies that are creating positive social change, and climate action. The good news is we have the tools and the ability to meet these needs. And I'm really looking forward to the next phase of ESG-related investing.
Absolutely. Yeah, a lot to stay on top of in this popular yet still evolving area within investing. But I know it's absolutely been more popular, more clients are asking about it, more potential clients are asking about it. So there's a lot of interest out there. And Matt, I want to thank you for taking the time to talk us through some of these finer points of ESG investing. And to all of our listeners, thank you for joining us today for this deeper dive into ESG investing. Please remember to subscribe to our podcasts wherever you find them or on our website at skwealth.com.